Today on Straight Talk Africa, African chefs in the United States continue to make immense contributions in America, as well as give back to their communities in their homelands. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, March 9th. I am Shaka Sali, and I'm back from a special assignment in East Africa. But first, I would like to thank my colleague, Esther Giwuth Ewart, for holding the fort during my absence.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and welcome back. And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about African chefs who share their African cuisine in the diaspora.
And coming up later in our social media segment, we'll share your thoughts on your favorite African food in general. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. And that's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
There are millions of Africans in America, and a good number of them rising to the top. Today, we shine a spotlight on three African chefs, Kwame Onwuachi, Negesti Gebreyesus, and Malcolm Riley, whose African flavors keep hungry clients asking for more. But first, VOA's Paul Sisco once visited Negesti, the Queen of Sheba, whose restaurant here in Washington, D.C., serves Ethiopian cuisine.
Negesti Gebreyesus is the queen. At the center of what some consider Little Ethiopia in Northwest Washington, D.C., is the Queen of Sheba restaurant, owned and operated by the Queen and her husband, Mbasa Mesigina.
You have to love the job. You have to like everything about it, the long hours, the demand. It could be slow, it could be busy. You have to prepare yourself.
I was recently invited for coffee. Mm-hmm.
Coffee is very important for us. It's our tradition to welcome guests by doing this kind of ceremony.
The Queen was born in Ethiopia, raised in Sudan, spent time in Canada, and now calls Washington, D.C. home.
I hope one day we are able to come to Ethiopia and expand our business.
The successful restaurant is something of a family affair. She runs it with her husband, a cousin, and a niece, a Spanish cook.
And daughter Marta, on vacations from college, helps in the almost always busy kitchen.
No, it's too much.
So this is a split peas. This is red lentils, green lentils, collard green, and cabbage.
That's where I got my first taste of a very special dish.
Mm.
All the food at the Queen of Sheba's is organic, traditional, and fresh.
You only can find this food here.
Many ingredients are flown in every day from Ethiopia.
And people keep coming again and again because it's authentic food and fresh. It's different and it's very healthy. People love it. And we love it that they love it so, you know, we can be in business for a long time.
The restaurant is a warm, friendly gathering place for conversation and much more. From noon to early morning, customers and friends and new friends eat, drink, visit, and enjoy at a pace much more Ethiopian than American. The restaurant is a little piece of Ethiopia in Washington, D.C.
Oh, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
I couldn't leave without promising the Queen I'd be returning.
You're welcome. Thank you. Want a taste?
Well, I have, and I can assure you I'll be back at the Queen of Sheba's again soon. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. And joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Negesti Gebreyesus, a manager at Queen of Sheba restaurant here in Washington, D.C. Kwame Onwuachi, a 2016 Bravo Top Chef contestant and the chef and owner of the show Bijo restaurant, also here in Washington, D.C. I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. It's our honor. It's our honor to be here.
You're most welcome. And joining us live via Skype from Devon, United Kingdom, is Malcolm Riley, an African chef who operates an online African spice company. It's a pleasure, of course, Malcolm, to have you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka, and I'm honored to be on Straight Talk Africa, and thank you very much for inviting me.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, of course, a chance to call and talk with our guests. Now, let me come to you immediately, the Queen. What is business like since you last appeared on the show?
It's wonderful. I think since we came to Straight Talk to Africa, we have some new clients, and yeah, so it's good. It's great.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How different did appearing on the show really make the business good or better?
Well, you know, we see new faces. We see more Africans and Americans. So I'm assuming it comes straight from your show.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Do some of those new guests talk about having seen you on Straight Talk Africa, in fact?
Yeah, I have a few people who told me they saw me, and some people came from Africa who purposely to see us, that they saw us in your show. So it was really nice.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, Kwame, you were born in Long Island, correct?
Yes, I was born on Long Island in Dix Hills.
And you are a native of the Bronx in New York.
Bronx, New York, yes, that's where I, that's the city I rep.
But you also have a Nigerian connection, and yet you are called Kwame, which happens to be Ghanaian.
It is, you know, I get this question all the time. my father's best friend was named Kwame when he was growing up, and he passed away in the ocean. So when he got older, he said, I would always name my son Kwame. And I just so happened to be born on Saturday, so it was a coincidence. But that's the story behind that.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what about you, Malcolm?
Yeah, my name is Malcolm and my surname is Riley, which doesn't sound very African, but I was born and raised in Africa. That's my heritage. I came to England with £200 in my pocket, and with me, I carried a suitcase, but I also carried with me a great passion for food, which comes from my mother's great love of cooking. And in Devon, what I do and what I've always wanted to do is utilize some of the key ingredients on the African landscape to help double the income of poor rural communities. And it's been hard, long struggle, and after 10 years, we're finally starting to see some fruits of our labor. And hopefully I can talk to you a bit more as the show progresses.
Now, Malcolm, it looks like you happen to be a beneficiary of what one would characterize as triple heritage. You obviously come from Africa, but talk about your connections with India and Europe.
Well, my father was originally a policeman, and he went back to Zambia as he was fed up with living in England. He met my mother, who is half black and half Indian, and my mom and dad had four children. They are three of us. Sadly, my younger brother passed away when I was very young. And so I grew up with a very eclectic mix of both African, Indian, and English food. And the great thing is my mother actually worked in a Chinese restaurant, and she ran her own catering business. She was also a butcher for 25 years, so she's been a tremendous influence in terms of my African heritage when it comes to food.
Very interesting. Let me come to you immediately, Negist. If you can, could you please walk us through a day in the life of the Sheba, the Queen of Sheba restaurant?
Well, So let's. Our day starts at 9 a.m. and we close Monday through Thursday at 2 a.m. So it's a long day. Mm-hmm. Weekend we close at 3 a.m. So it's a long, long hours. We start breakfast, lunch, dinner, and we have a bar. So it's a very long hours. We have a lot of people coming, and it's a party all day long.
And do you do that Monday through Sunday?
My day off is on Sunday, unless I have some special event going on. So I try to rest on Sunday and go to church. But if I have to be there, I'll be there.
Well, what about Kwame? Could you please walk us through a day in the life?
A day in the life.
Chef Kwame Onuachi himself and the show. And the Shaw Bijou. Is it Bijou?
The Shaw Bijou.
Bijou.
So the Shaw, you know, Shaw is a district that the restaurant is in. And Bijou is Jewel in French.
Which is French.
My mother's name is Jewel, and I always wanted to name my first restaurant after her. So I got started cooking because of her. She's a chef as well.
Does your mother happen to have some French heritage?
She's Creole. So Creole is, you know, black and French, out of New Orleans.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. What inspired you to get into this business?
My mother inspired me. Mm-hmm. She had a catering company that she operated from the house when we were younger. So like me and my sister were her first two employees, essentially. Mm-hmm. Our chores were helping her, you know, get her mise en place or her ingredients ready for the events.
Now I gather that you are a trained chef in classical French cuisine.
Yes.
At the Culinary Institute of America.
Yes.
How do you, for example, reconcile this training with African cuisine?
Well, you know, I wouldn't consider it's training with African cuisine. Mm-hmm. I would say the techniques, you can apply them to any cuisine. You know, by learning the proper cooking techniques, you can make a lot of traditional dishes more acceptable to the masses, essentially. I spent 2 years in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I was like very bad kid growing up.
Very young.
And my mom told me I was going on a trip for 2 months to Nigeria, and she ended up making me stay there for 2 years so I could learn respect.
Is that when I gather that you received an orange as a Christmas birthday?
Yes, I did. I did.
What was your reaction?
Thank you. I loved oranges, so I was like, all right, this is cool. You know, I wasn't used to getting that. You know, in America, I got a PlayStation for Christmas. But in Africa, it's different. You know, we used to pick our own palm kernels and pound them and, you know, strain it to make palm oil so we can cook with, you know. So, like, after seeing these, you know, these methods of cooking, you have a greater appreciation for cooking and for life itself, especially if you're growing up in America, you know, when you can pick something off of an aisle that's wrapped in cellophane and you have no true connection to this animal. You know, a lot of people don't even know what these animals look like. They don't think they were ever alive. They think pigs are like cute little, you know, things with curly tails, you know? So I think growing up spending time in Nigeria really changed my perception on food and, you know, life as I knew it at the time.
You talk a lot about your mom, but very little about your father.
Mm-hmm.
Any particular reason why?
You know, me and my father, we didn't have the best relationship. He was definitely in my life. You know, he's a huge part of my life. You know, he's taught me how to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely connected with my mother growing up because my parents split up at a young age. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just circumstantial that happened. But, you know, it is what it is, and I'm here today.
I gather that you regard your mom as your hero.
Yes.
Is she the secret behind your success?
I would say so. You know, she always told me to chase happiness. And I think by me chasing happiness is how I got here today. Secret of my success, I think, is just having a positive attitude. And seeing my mom go through hardships and prevailing over that, I think, gave me a positive outlook on life.
Very interesting. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social network website, Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA African Cuisine. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Malcolm, are you there? Malcolm?
Hello,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, talk to us about your experience or relationship with the first tree food, the baobab's highly nutritious properties.
Okay. Basically, 10 to 11 years ago, I began the journey of exploring about utilizing the baobab in a food product. And one day I sat down to a documentary by Ray Mears. And Ray Mears is basically, he's a gentleman who travels around the world and teaches various forms of bushcraft. And he's very well known here in England. So while watching this documentary, I saw a particular part when he was talking about baobab. And on that part, he was actually visiting the sand tribe of the Kalahari. And since I was from Zambia and we grew up with baobabs and eating what is known as the cream of tartar, I was very taken by the fact that they were actually using the seed as a substitute for coffee. And the sand tribe would use the seed as a drink. And that was the initial light bulb moment for myself, where I thought, after working in the natural and organic health sector for close to 12 years, I can launch a product using this. But after traveling back to Zambia and meeting a wonderful lady at a cooperative, I found she was the only person actually processing baobab. And then getting back to England and trying to launch an African named company that was utilizing the baobab wasn't easy. We had to go through a whole novel foods application approval because the fruit was never consumed in this country. But that's all past now. And basically, baobab is heralded as Africa's superfood. And as being an early pioneer of the fruit, it's taken close to 10 years to finally get and capture the imagination and also the general health properties to the consumer. So we're finally at that stage where people realize what baobab is. And it's, you know, it's a wonderful ingredient. And not just the health properties, because it basically has twice as many antioxidants as goji berries, cranberries, and blueberries. Very rich in calcium, very rich in iron. It has double the iron of red meat, and really rich in dietary fiber. And, you know, it's a wonderful ingredient. As a chef, it has many various uses, but the key thing, the key, really key thing, is that the baobab can help double the income of over 1 million rural communities in Africa because the fruit isn't utilized. Most of it's estimated that 250,000 tons just in Southern Africa goes to waste. It's an amazing resource waiting for the African landscape to utilize, more so the people. And this is what I do. This is what I've been trying to do for such a long time. And I am obviously very privileged to finally reach a stage where in the next coming months, some of our products will finally come mainstream. And this is the beginning process when larger amounts, where the small rural communities who have been harvesting can actually start benefiting. So it really is an exciting time. But we don't actually just utilize baobab, we also utilize moringa. We're trying to pioneer the cooking side of shea butter as well. And we've had a very hard time also trying to have the African plum, known as safu, reach the commercial stages. So at this stage, our focus has been baobab. We're now moving it slowly into moringa, and shea butter is coming within the next few months. It is available on our website. But then safu, we're hoping once we get some funding, we can basically pioneer that as well.
I see. Let me come to you, Negisti. I'm sorry for some technical difficulties. You're probably not able to share what I am listening to. Do you have any specific plans for example, expanding your business? I realize that there was a time when you told me that you were thinking in terms perhaps of opening up some business back in Ethiopia.
Yes, I am seriously concerning going there, and hopefully by next year. It's not a restaurant. I'm going more of agriculture or into the farming.
Mm-hmm.
I was there last year, and there's a lot of opportunities that Ethiopia is offering, a lot of things that for diaspora to be successful. So, and the government is offering like a lot of if you put 25% down, they give you the rest, and so we're going to take that opportunity and try there.
I know, of course, walking back in memory lane, that you are a product of humble beginnings.
Thank you.
A lot of struggle, but you nevertheless, of course, persisted, and you are where you are because of hard work and a lot of things. Do you sometimes also think about people who happen to be perhaps not as fortunate as you and I? And if you do, what do you do for them, for example? Any philanthropic connections back to Ethiopia?
Exactly. The reason we're going, me and a few of my friends are going, and my husband, of course, going to Ethiopia, is this kind of situation, especially if you are focusing on agriculture. Most of the Ethiopian people are farmers, so if you focus there and you bring easier way of doing farming and helping the people to do an easy way of producing farming, I think that would be helpful, and there's a lot of money in it too.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Now, Kwame, talk to us about a cooking competition where you were eliminated because of a conceptual mistake and not a cooking one.
Well, yeah, Top Chef, that's what you're talking about. Let's get to the point. Wanted to do a fast casual concept, and I chose to do chicken and waffles.
Mm-hmm.
I used frozen waffles, and they didn't really like that because it was a cooking competition. I shouldn't have done that. But you know, I felt it was a fast food, fast casual concept. So in that sort of circumstance, that's something that you would do. It was miniature waffles, so I used the miniature frozen waffles. So it's kind of like a one-biter. And they didn't like it. They said it was the best chicken and waffle they've had, but they couldn't get over the fact that it was a store-bought product. And that's, you know, I can understand that, and I can get behind that, so.
Do you think that it was a mistake from your part, or was it perhaps, as some would put it, perhaps a result of judges who may have been prejudiced one way or the other?
No, not at all. I think it was a cooking competition. You know, they take 17 of the best chefs in the country at the time and put them on national television and put them through this rigorous, series of challenges. At that point, it was only six of us left. You know, I made it to the top six, and we had to do a fast casual concept. Every chef on there was a James Beard Award winning chef or a James Beard Award nominated chef. I was the youngest chef in the competition. So
very young indeed, you're still young.
So I felt it was no prejudice. I used frozen product. A I shouldn't use frozen product. I think I got the competition like get in my head, and you know that's where I went wrong. But you know, I'm doing a pop-up, a fast casual concept in DC, the first, second, and third, and you may see chicken and waffles appearing in this pop-up.
What do you think led to that? Is it perhaps because you may not have been given some tips prior to the event?
No, you know, it's a competition, so nobody gets tips. We're all thrown, we're all under the same scope and all under the same pressure. So I don't want to say I had, you know, a misfortunate circumstance.
No homework, really? No requirement for homework? Some homework?
Oh, no.
Perhaps talking to people who...
Oh, no. It's this is your challenge. Get in there, go to Whole Foods, go shop for it, and now we're judging you. There's no time for homework. You know, we get about 30 minutes to kind of think of what we're doing, and we have to feed 200 people. So, you know, it's very fast, and if you make one slight mistake, you're going home. And I just happened to make that mistake that day, you know.
How old is your restaurant so far?
My restaurant isn't open yet. It opens in 4 months.
In 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah.
And any reaction so far before it opens? Because I understand it's supposed to be a very high-class type of...
Yeah, I mean, we had a large spread in the Washington Post the other day. We were on the cover of the food section of the Washington Post for the restaurant. And, you know, Tim Carman did an excellent job at telling my story. And I think we're getting a lot of good feedback. You know, the way that I was presented on the show, you know, it showed just a real person. It didn't seem like I was just a reality television star. You know,
really?
I was a person that was consoling the other competitors, giving people advice, helping people break down lamb, because I want to beat somebody at their best and at their worst. You know, I thought I already won when I got called to go on the competition, being that young. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I did not have a malicious bone in my body being on that show. I wanted to really win by pure skill. So,
who do you expect to be the typical client of your restaurant?
I think it's going to be the whole gamut. You know, it's definitely an expensive restaurant to the average person, but you know, we're not selling a meal if you're just hungry. You don't go there just, oh, I'm hungry, let me go to the Shaw Bijou. It's no, oh, it's your birthday, let's have a celebration. So it's like an event. You know, you go to a Broadway play, who are the typical guests at Broadway plays? It's the whole gamut. You know, it's people that enjoy theater, it's people that going for an experience. And I think my restaurant is more of an experience destination. So I think you'll see, you know, all walks of life coming to the Shaw Bijou.
Would Shaka Sari, for example, qualify to be one of your clientele, really?
With who?
Shaka Sari.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
How much, for example, would a seating cost or a plate for that much?
We're still working on the price point. You know, we don't want to put it out there, but it's definitely going to be at least $150. Yeah.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow. So what capital are we talking about now? You know, how much are you using to fund the restaurant?
How much did the restaurant cost?
Yeah.
Is what you're asking?
The capital, yeah.
It was almost $1.5 million.
So you're such a very rich guy, rich dude.
I'm rich in positive attitude, I'd say that, and rich in love, I would say.
Well, congratulations on that, at least.
Thank you.
You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jello. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, I think, Shaka, I'm going to start a fundraising so we can be ready to for the Shaw Bijou when it opens, so we make sure we can afford it and we can obviously be part of that experience. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic and quite juicy feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan who makes me very hungry, talking about his favorite Zambian food.
Emmanuel Mponga writes, no African food beats Zambian shima, which is cooked using water and mealy meal. When you have it in the morning, you are covered for the whole day.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at voanews.com/African Beat.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Entrepreneurs from across the globe bring the taste of Africa to new places by investing in African restaurants in Washington, D.C., London, Paris, and elsewhere. But we wanted to also know what your cravings are and what satisfies you when it comes to African food, leading us to our question of the week, asking, what is your favorite African cuisine? Well, from Zambia's Nshima to Matoke, fufu, chebujen, egusi soup, to tibs and injera bread and carrot and ginger relish, or baobab chili jams, I have to tell you, I am starving just saying these words. But before we get to your favorites, let me first thank you for using all our social media platforms to communicate to us. A reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA African Cuisine. And if you haven't yet, please do follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of which, let's go to a tweet from Luba Official from Kampala in Uganda, who tweets, we have a local dish here in Uganda called lapena, and we do love it a lot. Well, another tweet comes from Sandy Narty from Accra in Ghana, who says that fufu and green soup with snails and crab meat are a Ghanaian delicacy. Let's now turn to our Facebook followers and go to a posting from Anthony Sankumbi from Mubende in Uganda, who writes, I like eating matoke with ground nuts and dry mushrooms. Well, Shaka, a selection of foods that are keeping all of us absolutely salivating right now. Your take, you and your guests, your take on this one.
Very interesting. Malcolm, are you there? Have you been following?
Yes, I'm here.
So what about that? Can you tell us something about Nshima? Is Nshima your favorite delicacy or what, or matoke?
Well, I'm very happy that they mentioned Nshima and from Zambia. You know, that was very good. Indeed, it's one of my all-time favorite dishes. And whenever I eat Nshima, it takes me back home. And, you know, it's something that my mom still cooks today. And it just encompasses, you know, so much of my heritage. And it's also something that I'm also trying to pioneer here in the UK, is basically trying to share some of the African knowledge, and along with some of the sustainable African tree foods that I've been trying to pioneer. I thought I'd do the reverse and bring some African knowledge. And one of the ingredients that we're actually starting to plant very shortly is pumpkin leaves. And the pumpkin leaves go very well with Nshima. And so that's always a great accompaniment. And the pumpkin leaves are cooked very slowly with onions, a bit of tomato, and traditionally groundnuts. And that's a dish known as zovundula, or in South Africa as masamba. And it's eaten all across Africa. And I've been trying here to educate people and say, you must eat these leaves. I can't believe, you know, the amount of pumpkins that are grown in the UK is phenomenal. And to think that the byproduct are the leaves, and they're delicious. So, you know, Nshima ranks on one of my top 10 dishes that I love. So I'm so happy that you mentioned it, and I had a chance to talk about pumpkin leaves.
Very interesting.
Well.
Very interesting. At least we share groundnuts, so peanuts,
indeed.
Peanuts sauce, and of course, I would add matoke. I hope next time I come to Queen of Sheba will find some matoke and a groundnut there. Mariama, what about you?
Yes, and I actually, maybe the Queen will be able to talk about, she brought us some delicious stuff right here in the studio. I'm saying this, probably our audience will feel a little bit bad that you guys won't be part of the feast afterwards. But hopefully the Queen will be able to tell us some of the delicious stuff she's brought us. But let's now, in the meantime, let's now turn to more comments. Starting with Mohamed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, I love to swallow the fufu with bitter leaf and a cow skin. Well, we'll end with one more post, this time from Omunuwa Okubo Ighodalo in Abuja, Nigeria, who writes that pounded yam and egusi soup with fresh fish is my favorite African food. Not only it's tasty, but it's also highly nutritious. No true African can afford not to love this tasty and nutritious indigenous African dish. By the description of it, I'll have to second that, but hoping that one of my Nigerian friends can invite me over soon for a taste. Shaka and Guess, once again, your take on these comments.
What about that, Queen of Sheba?
About
what they just said, do you hope to incorporate a bit of that so that it can be inclusive rather than exclusively Ethiopian?
I would love it. I mean, you know, as an African, we all have to come together and create something. And if anybody's interested, they're welcome and bring their ingredients and we can work together.
Really?
Oh, yeah? That's an invitation to me?
Yeah, well, for
what,
you,
what young about,
man.
What about you, Kwame? What about
I love
you?
Egusi. That's my favorite, egusi stew with fufu. I actually have a dish on my menu. It's a goosey stew, but it's used with braised monkfish.
What about pepper soup?
Pepper soup, hot pepper soup, of course.
Is it going to be there?
It won't be there on this menu. So it's a tasting menu. So it's 17 courses of different bites.
Mm-hmm.
So the opening menu won't have the goosey stew, but mm-hmm. you know, who knows? Down the line, I'm thinking of putting a goosey stew, pepper soup, you know, some suya on there, things like that. So
you better be inclusive, man, so that at least you can even have some African embassies as some of your clients.
Of course.
Huh?
For sure,
eh? Of course, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There'd be something for everyone there.
Wow. Mariama, well, I have to say that it's been a pleasure, of course, being with you again in Studio 52. Go for it.
Well, I guess if my Nigerian friends don't invite me in the meantime, I'll definitely taste that egusi soup at Kwame's restaurant. Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. A reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty. Join host Shaka Sally, his panel of guests, and me, Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter, as we talk about Africa's land and poverty. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. And today, of course, we are talking about African cuisine. Our distinguished guests in Washington, Negesti Gebreyesus and Kwame Onwuachi, also joining us via live Skype in Devon, United Kingdom, is Malcolm Riley. Well, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, once again, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, obviously, you've been following very closely, Malcolm. You said somewhere, when I was doing research about you, that your goal was, of course, to help the people in rural Africa.
That's correct.
First of all, what exactly do you mean by that, and how have you been able to fare with that kind of goal so far?
Well, as you know, millions of people all across the tropics live on $1 a day. So what I wanted to do is create a revolutionary food brand that had the capacity to help double the income of poor rural communities in Africa. And when I grew up in Zambia and we traveled to a game park, perhaps on a safari or fishing expedition, and the baobab was in season, we would harvest, hit the fruit with either a stick or a stone, and basically crack it open, suck the cream of tartar, and we'd throw it away. So this was the general norm that was happening, you know, for such a long time. And through my work over the years, and also working with a non-profit organization known as Phyto Africa, who has also been spearheading a number of the sustainable tree foods. And obviously, baobab was identified as one of the key crops that had a tremendous impact on the landscape, just because it was so underutilized. So, for instance, you know, we talked of Nshima, and Nshima is, you know, a staple across the African landscape. But Nshima has a slightly different profile in terms of nutritional levels compared to baobab. But because Nshima is processed in the form of almost like a flour, which is mixed into water, it then becomes a staple food. So that's what we've been trying to utilize. And basically all across the African landscape, you have various different tribes and how they utilize the baobab. Some tribes utilize it more. So for instance, in the Gambia, they're very used to basically consuming baobab. But from where I am, from Southern Africa and from Zambia, we didn't grow up consuming it as much as it could be utilized. So through working with certain key traditional and basically rural communities, Phyto Trade Africa has basically implemented a strategy of woodlands where the fruit can be harvested, it's then taken to a processing plant, and the rural communities can basically earn the income from taking the fruit for it to be processed. It's because baobab is so abundant. It occurs in 31 African countries. It's estimated that it's well over $1 billion to the African economy. So there is more baobabs that basically can help with food for the African continent as well. As in the West, where in terms of its health-giving properties, it can be utilized in those various forms, such as in smoothies and, you know, in raw foods, which is a real big trend at the moment. So there's a particular market on both sides. So, but it's growing. So all the small scale farmers who are harvesting the fruits, they're finally being able to earn an income from. Whereas a few years ago, that fruit would have gone to waste.
I see. Well, thank you very much. Let me come to you again, Nigistu. We talked about the possibility perhaps of you expanding your cuisine to be a little bit more inclusive rather than exclusive. Are you sincere that you are in fact going to seriously pay attention to that? Because there is a lot of market for that here. I don't know whether you are familiar, for example, with the Kenyan brand, which is called Nyamachoma. Sukuma wiki and ugali, which is like Nshima, really. And of course, I might add, for my own selfish purposes, matoke. Mm-hmm. Can you seriously consider becoming a little bit more exclusively East African rather than exclusively Ethiopian and Eritrean?
As I said, it's really, I never had that idea, but today it's a great idea and I would love it. Because as I said, we have to come together, you know, and we, by sharing food, is sharing love, respect, and we will know each other's culture. And it's so, instead of traveling all over Africa to find each cuisine, you can come in one restaurant in Queen of Sheba, hopefully, and taste all some of African cuisines.
Very interesting. Of course, I can't wait for you, Kwame, to open the show Bijou. And I hope that, again, you too, sincerely, you will be more inclusive rather than exclusive.
Absolutely. The restaurant is all about being inclusive. You know, it's modern American cuisine with global influence. And I like to travel. And I like to reinterpret cultural dishes through my eyes and the way that I perceive food at this time. So, you know, there's a dish on my menu inspired by Ethiopian cuisine. It's a foie gras with a berbere gastrique. You know, it's taking those French techniques and applying them to these global flavors. And by doing that, you kind of introduce flavors and maybe things that people aren't used to in a more conventional way, you know, make it more approachable, but still refined. So, yeah, I love that. And I'd love to do all types of African cuisine, you know, from east to south.
Very interesting. A reminder that you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll continue our discussion in a moment.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Yeah, thank you very much. Of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. I must say that I am encouraged by the fact that you two seem to be very open to expanding your cuisine.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a vision we probably had before we came on the show. You know, just being someone that loves cuisine in itself, eating different types of cuisine teaches you about food and it broadens your palate. You know, so we'd be foolish to not want to, you know, kind of spread the love and, you know, cater to all different types of cultures.
Nikisti, what kind of reaction do you get from people who come to the Queen of Sheba?
Well,
about the quality of your service, the quality of your food, and all that kind of stuff.
Honestly, we're all about 11 years into the business, so something good is going on. And
right? Speaks for itself.
Exactly. We have people coming from all over the world, and people around us, and our communities. We have a great support, and they say they love it. It's supposed to be one of the best food in town.
Really?
Yeah.
You, I think, once told me that you also had interest in other aspects of the business.
As my other job is a cleaning service. We work for the DC government. My friend is, her name is Terhas Waldai, and I work together, and we have, it's growing, actually. We're doing great. Thank God.
It's doing great.
Yeah.
Malcolm, what about you? What is the feedback from the people? I realize, of course, that your business is an online type of business, but what kind of reaction have you been getting from your clients?
I can't meet demand, basically, at the moment. We hand produce all our African inspired products from the little kitchen at home. And for the last 3 years, every single batch that we produce is completely sold out. Our baobab chili jam basically won best food product in Devon in 2013 at the Devon Food and Drink Awards. We've also picked up a gold at the World Marmalade Awards and also a great taste as well. So it's always been a real hard testing time to reach a stage where we could outsource some of the production of our condiments to help reach a larger community. And basically, that's where we are. So it's a really positive moment. And as when I was speaking to you earlier, I've just come back from probably one of the most important meetings of my life and my year's works, both with pioneering the use of baobab and finally the fruition of our labor is coming to the fore. And it's an exciting time, and I'm really looking forward to the future. And I'm really privileged to be on Straight Talk, you know. It gives us another opportunity to showcase and to promote our business, because as a small business, it's very hard to raise enough funding, more so for the marketing and PR of a business. And it's usually the stumbling blocks for a number of small businesses. So thank you very much.
Do you get more of your ingredients from the United Kingdom, or do you get most of it from the African continent?
Well, it's part from the UK, and it's part from Africa. After obviously working in the natural and organic health sector, and basically where the current food trend is, we're highly geared towards localized economies and locally produced foods. You know, that's the key thing and driving force behind the business. So when we initially launched our company, we found it really difficult when we were selling baobab jam, because there was this heightened drive towards local ingredients. But by fusing the two together, so we were working with a fantastic company here that's also based in the UK, which is Barfoots, and they own a number of farms in Senegal, and they actually one of the biggest producers of chilies in the UK, and the all the major supermarkets purchase chilies from them, and we're very fortunate to be working alongside them. So some of those chilies that we use in our condiments, some are sourced from Senegal. We also use sweet potatoes. We use butternut. So those are grown in Africa, but then we're utilizing them here on the in the UK in an African inspired way that's both modern and people love them. So along with that, there's a range of other, you know, spices that that might go in it. You know, hibiscus we use in our baobab cordial. There's tamarind as well. We obviously utilize what I explained, the baobab. We utilize moringa as well. And then there's a host of obviously normal ingredients like salt and pepper, which you normally buy and which have their normal trade routes, you know, that come in from various parts of the world. So that's what we do. We fuse the two ingredients. So on general, it's around almost 50-50. So the consumer ends up getting a product that basically has the capacity to help poor rural communities in Africa. We also try and give back to the David Shepherd Wildlife Foundation, but that helps support conservation of some of the world's endangered animals. So I'd like to think of the African Chef brand as basically helping improve nutrition, health, and rehabilitate degraded land. And obviously, the most important thing is supporting the rural communities from Africa, from where I'm from.
Malcolm, what is moringa? If you were to explain it to a lay person, what is moringa?
Moringa is basically the most nutrient-rich, dense plant on Earth. It has such a vast amount of nutrients. But the important thing about moringa, and the same as with baobab, they actually grow in drought-stricken areas. So in certain parts of Africa where it's very difficult to cultivate certain crops, crops like moringa, like the baobab, can be cultivated. And the leaves of the baobab are can be used in a certain number of dishes, but the leaf of the moringa is one of the key ingredients. And in certain parts of West Africa, they've actually been growing the moringa to help malnourished children. And what they do is the moringa leaf is put into a powder form. It's then added as a nutritional base to malnourished children. And this is very key because the key building blocks and amino acids of children's development begins at those early stages of life. So moringa has the capacity to help give them those nutrients.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Now, Kwame, where are you going to be getting ingredients? Is there a chance that you might even get some from your mother's, your father's country of birth?
I would love to do that. As of right now, no. I actually get my berbere from Ethiopia, though. So that's one thing. But, you know, it my menu changes frequently. I use berbere as my all-purpose seasoning. I cut it with salt.
What is berbere?
I think you'd be better to tell what that is.
Berbere is a powdered pepper, and it's a rich, it's rich in color, and it's pepper, but we add a lot of spice in it, like all kind of spice, maybe with 10 items, different kind of spices. It makes it rich, very flavor.
Smoky
and
a little bit.
Tasty.
It's delicious.
It's you know, it's not that hot, but it's hot enough.
So is there a chance that Kwame, in fact, after all, at the end of the day, you might end up collaborating with the Queen of Sheba herself?
I would be honored. It would be
honored.
Thank you, sir. It's just Sheba. Happening now, the really? Connection, the African connection here.
Yes.
So when again are you expecting to open?
You know, we're looking in the next 4 months. We're at the mercy of the government with permits. I'm pretty sure you can attest to that.
Yeah.
That's probably the hardest, one of the biggest issues when opening a restaurant in Washington, D.C. is dealing with the permitting offices. So we're waiting on a permit. We're looking 4 months out, but, you know, it could be 6 months, so.
Is it going to be a major event, the opening?
I think so.
I'm sure.
I'd say so. Our opening is a major event. Yeah. But we won't have like a large grand opening. It'll be something small. You know, there's only 28 seats. So we want to get a system going and make sure when we do open that it's ready to go. And there's no like, it's our first week opening. Can, you know, take it easy on us. Because the critics aren't going to take it easy on us. So we have to be prepared.
Of course, it comes alongside a bar. You'll be having some wines and liquors and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, palm wine. You know, we'll have it all, yes.
You're going to be actually having palm wine?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
From where?
From Nigeria.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, yeah. Making the connection back home after all.
Yes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, thanks to our guests, Nigisti Ghebreyesus, a manager at Queen of Sheba Restaurant here in Washington, Kwame Onwuachi, a 2016 Bravo Top Chef contestant, the chef and owner of the Show Bijou restaurant, also here in Washington, and joining us live via Skype from Devo, United Kingdom, is Malcolm Riley, an African chef who operates an online African spice company. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive. Thank you so much.